Fulton at the top of Saitama from the bays, second line from the top. And I'm just going to give a simon for the various dinim that we're going to be discussing from here until the end of the Sovian at the top of Saitama from Aleph. Simon Ella for Meya, Mitzvah, Beksuba, Yaakov, Zakov, Sadeisa, Bedvarim, Asikim. Each of these is a, as usual with the simonim in the Gemara, each of them is a key word for one of the for one of the halachas that are going to be discussed. The first few of them are statements of Rami Bar Choma, which Rava disagrees with him on, and then you end up with a couple of other miscellaneous ones. There's, by the way, an interesting thing that I saw. There's one of the Meforshim on Rashi is a sefer called Maskil LeDavid from Rabbi David Pardo, one of the famous Sfarish Rav from a couple hundred years ago. Another sefer he wrote is called Lamnaseach LeDavid, it's a Chedushim on Shas, and in the back of it he has explanations, usually Arki Kabbalah, for all the simonim in Shas. In this case, he has an interesting one explaining this one. He says, Apikabala. He says that Aleph and Meya, he has a bit of a long explanation, how Aleph and Meya represent, respectively, Aleph is the highest, largest ksuba that's ever mentioned in the Mishnah, 100 is the smallest. Because even though it's technically 200 and 100, but you can add, and the Mishnah, for example, our Mishnah, had talked about where you have a ksuba of 1,000. So the 1,000 represents the first Bais HaMikdash, when we were on a closer level with Hashem, on a closer relationship with Hashem. The Meya represents the second Bais HaMikdash, Mitzvah B'Ksuba, that both of them, there's a Ksuba, so to speak, between us and Hashem. But then Yaakov Zakov Sadoisa, where Yaakov put up his fields as collateral, the fields represented the Bais HaMikdash, with both of which got destroyed. Why? B'Dvarim Asikim, because of words of argument. Because we find that both of the first Bais HaMikdash were destroyed because of Lashon Hara, among other things, because of Lashon Hara, and the second Bais HaMikdash because of Sin Eskenam. So therefore he says that's the deeper meaning of this simon. First case, Ha'u Gavra Dava Maskebe Alpha Zuzi. There was a person who owed 1,000 zuz to a creditor. Havala Treya Patni, he had two mansions. Zavinu Chota B'Chomeshmeya B'Chota B'Chomeshmeya. So he sold one for 500 and the other one also for 500. Most Meforshim say that we're talking about over here that he sold them all, that he sold them both to the same person. Also, Bachos. So he sold, so two of them together, he sold for 1,000. For a mansion, yeah. 500 zuz. Well, it depends on what kind of mansion we're talking about, right? Again, I mean, you know, I don't know, you can't really make exact comparisons between those days and nowadays, but if 200 zuz is supposed to be enough to live on for a year, then 500 zuz is 2.5 times that. So what would it, you know, in modern terms, what would it be, you know, 100,000, 150,000? Okay, you know, fine. In Crown Heights, that will get you a refrigerator carton, but in the rest of the world, you know, Okay. So he sold each one for 500 zuz. Also, Bachov tore for the chadaminayu. So the Bachov came and took one of them away to satisfy half the debt. Hoduk also Bachov tore for idach. Now the Bachov is coming and wants to take the second one. So this buyer, who by assumption we're saying the same buyer bought both mansions, shuffle alpha zuz because of legabe. He took 1,000 zuz in his hand and went to meet with the Bachov. Amalei, he says, let me give you a choice. I don't want you to take the second mansion as well. Ishavyaloch alpha zuzi, if you're willing to consider the first mansion that you took, that it's even though nominally it's worth 500 zuz, you're willing to consider it 1,000 zuz and then not take anything else, lachaya, then good. Then you'll keep that one and at least I'll have the other one. V'iloi, but if not, shakal alpha zuzi v'istalik, then take these 1,000 zuz that I'm offering you and leave the whole thing alone. Leave both mansions alone, give me back the original one and let me keep the second one as well. So Rami Bar Choma thought to say, this is exactly the case of our Mishnah. Where we said that if, for example, in the example of the Mishnah where the two ksubas together are 1,500 and the whole estate is only 1,500 and the Yisayimim, the children of the wife whose ksuba is 1,000 offer, you know what, we'll estimate the value of the property as 1,501 instead of 1,500 so that we can collect our mother's ksuba. And the Mishnah said, ain't shaman land. We don't listen to them. We just look at the actual assessed value. So Rami Bar Choma thought to say the same thing over here. He has no ability to say to this guy, you know, consider it to be the equivalent of 1,000 or take the money and whatever. Amalei Rava, mi dami. So Rava says, how could you compare it? Hasim islu pseidali yasmi, because in that case of our Mishnah, what's going to happen if you do allow them to consider the estate to be worth more than 1,500? You're causing the second set of Yisayim to lose out. Like this, they would each get one fraction of the Yerusha. like this, if you didn't do that, like this, you're telling them that automatically 1,000 is going to go to their half-brothers. Here, how is the Baal, in the scenario we're talking about, how is the Baal Chayiv losing out? Alpha Yohiv, Alpha Shokil. He gave 1,000 as a loan originally, he's getting back 1,000. So yes, you should have the option to be able to tell him that. Tosfos, by the way, discusses, Tosfos and a bunch of other Mefarshim discuss over here, that are we also bringing in another point over here, which is, the Gemara talks about in a couple of places, whether once property has been taken away from somebody, called a shumah, whether the original owner of it has the right to get it back. So whether the Gemara discusses it in Bava Metzia in connection, shumah literally means an evaluation. So when Beis Din evaluated the value of something taken away from somebody in payment of something that they owed, do they have a right later on to go to the person who got it and offer them money and get it back? So the Gemara mentions in Bava Metzia that yes, they're entitled to do that, but the context in which the Gemara mentions it over there is when it was taken away from him to satisfy a judgment because of nizikin. In the case over there is a shomer who lost the object who misplaced the object that was given to him, and so they had to take away property from him, and later on it turned up.
Okay,
we're not getting into that right now. But the point is, does that apply more generally to a case like this, where Reuven owed the money, he sold property to Shimon, Levi, the creditor, is coming and taking it away from Shimon? Are we saying that Shimon has the right to do the same kind of thing, to go and offer this Baal Chayiv, Levi, money in order to get his property back? Or do we say, no, only the original owner of it has the ability to do that because of Asita Yoshev HaTov? The buyer, not necessarily. So that's Tosfos discusses it, many other Rishonim discuss how that fits with this Gemara over here. Is Rami Bachama saying, besides his point from our Mishnah that you can't overvalue the property, is he also bringing in this idea that he doesn't have the right to force the Baal Chayiv, look, take this 1,000 and give me back and give me back the mansion? Or maybe he does. And Rava is telling him that yes, you do, which would fit according to the Rambam. Yes, the same din applies. That yes, the lakeach in this case does have the right to say that, just as the mazik in the other case to say take the 1,000 and give me back the and force him to give back the land in return for money. So different Rishonim talk about the possibilities whether our Gemara is recapitulating that same machlokas. Rami Bachama and Rava would be having that same basic machlokas, or whether it's a different issue over here. The Tosfos says that it's a different issue. For one thing, because over here we're talking about the question is he's offering him more than the value of the mansion that he took so far. So therefore, maybe Rava would say over here, yes, he has the right to do that, as opposed to the other case. The typical case would be you offering him the exact value of it. What if he was only offering him 500 in this scenario over here?
Similar to the Moshe, it's offering more.
That would be what?
Similar to the union of Moshe.
Moshe?
Yeah.
Oh, Moshe dinner. No, Moshe dinner was something else. That was
something.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. The next question, so it depends which rishon. The Rambam paskins that this din does apply to does apply in the case of a Baal Chayiv and a lakeach as well. That the lakeach can force him to give back the land and exchange for the money. Yeah. Okay. So now the question is, v'tirpa b'kama kasvin. And okay, let's say the Baal Chayiv is willing to do that. So now you have then that the mansion was worth 500, but he offered him 1,000 in order to get it back. So when you write a shtar, now, we're assuming that the original sale was done by achrayus. By achrayus meaning, we've talked about before, and we're going to talk about later on, at the bottom of the Amud and on Tzadik Beis, that normally when you sell a field or you sell real estate or whatever, you include in it a guarantee that if one of my creditors comes and takes it away from you, I'll reimburse you. So in this... Well, that's a different thing. The Gemara talks about in the first paragraph above Matthias that usually Achrayus tells Sofri that, right, even if Achrayus is not written in the Shtar, we assume it's supposed to be there. But there could be a case, which we'll talk about later on Tzadik Beis, there could be a case where specifically you don't say Achrayus. You specifically say, I'm selling it to you without Achrayus. But yeah, the normal situation is there is Achrayus.
It's implied, in other words.
Yeah. So usually there's a chayus then. So what happened? If this guy, so if Shimon was going to have the property taken away from him, and he bought it off he bought himself out by giving 1,000 to the Baal Chayiv, when we write a shtar tirpo, when we write for him a shtar that, look, you now have the right to go get reimbursed by the original seller, what do we write it for? 500 or 1,000? 500 because that's what he actually bought it for, or 1,000 because that's what he had to offer in order to keep it. Ravina Oma Ba'alpha, Rav Avira Oma B'chamashmeya. So Ravina says you write 1,000, and Rav Avira says you write 500. Hilchas B'chamashmeya, and in fact the halacha is that you write 500. That's how much he's entitled to reimbursement from Rovin, the initial amount that he invested in. A similar case, Hahu Gavra Dava Maske B'meya Zuzi. There was a person who owed 100 Zuz. Havla Tshrik Tini Da'ari, he had two small plots of land. He sold one for 50 zuz and the other one also for 50 zuz. And here the Meiri says, now the case is going to be almost identical to the previous one with the mansion. So in fact, a number of Mephoroshim asked why the Gemara bothers repeating it. The Meiri says, because we're actually, it's a slightly different case. The first case was talking about both mansions were sold to the same guy. Here we're talking about the two fields were sold to two different people. There's other explanations that Shitta Mukhabetis talks about, that maybe the value of a field and the value of a mansion, one's more fixed than the other, kind of. Okay.
But he was forced to buy it back.
Well, wait. Off Baal Chayiv tov l'chad minayu. So again, similar idea. The Baal Chayiv came and took one of the fields away to satisfy half the debt. Now he's coming and trying to take the other one. So the buyer takes 100 zuz and goes to him. If you're willing to accept that the first field you took, even though normally it's worth only 50, you're willing to consider it as 100, then good. And if not, then take this 100 zuz that I'm offering you and leave the field alone entirely, and let me have back the original field as well.
It seems he's giving him a choice in this case.
In both cases, he's giving it the same exact choice he's giving him.
Right.
Yeah.
We said he can force him.
But the question is, there's two different kinds of forcing. That's the thing. One is to say that you're going to consider this one mansion that he took, which was nominally worth 500, you're going to treat it as if it's worth 1,000. Or similarly, the first plot of land is nominally worth 50, but you're going to consider it as 100, and therefore that the whole debt has been paid off, and then you'll leave the second one in my possession. Or I'll pay you off and you won't have any mansions or any fields. Because I'll effectively buy this one that you took away already, I'll buy it off you for 100 or for 1,000.
Why which option?
Because what this lekeach, but not necessarily is the Baal Chayiv going to be willing to say, what do you mean? I got a mansion that's only worth 500. Why should I be willing to consider that a loan of 1,000 is paid off by that? The fact is, if I want to go and resell this mansion, I'm only going to get 500 for it.
No, but if he gives him 1,000,
that's the thing.
And the field is worth 500, but the debt is 1,000. How can he hold on?
He's not holding on. That's the thing. He's giving him a choice. He's telling him that. Look, you took away a mansion in Crown Heights and a mansion in Flatbush. Or you took away the one in Crown Heights, you're threatening to take the one in Flatbush. So, the one in Crown Heights, if you're willing to consider it to already be worth 1,000, and therefore that the debt's been paid off, wonderful. You can keep the Crown Heights one, I'll keep the Flatbush one.
Right.
If you don't want to do that, then you know what, since I don't want you to take the Flatbush one, then I'll be left with no mansion at all. Then what I'm going to do is I'm going to buy you out. I'm going to give you 1,000. You return me the Crown Heights one. You wind up with your 1,000 paying off the debt. I wind up with both of the mansions that I bought.
And that should be the only alternative.
No, because if the creditor is willing to take the first option,
just because the debt was not paid.
Right, but now he's saying, you know what? Maybe I'm fine. Maybe I'm satisfied to take one mansion and it'll be considered, and I'll have one.
Without any money?
Yes, let's say. He's willing
without
to.
Without any money?
Yeah, especially because that's what we're talking about. Especially because, the value of real estate can change. And in fact, the Gemara talks about in Bava Metzia and Connect. Right. So the Gemara talks about in connection with the halachas of Aynah that the dinim of Aynah don't apply to property, and you can even have a case that talks about over there where you sell property for twice as much as it's really worth. Because yes, it can happen that people overvalue property. Location, 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 Lashon HaYadua. So a person might decide, you know what, it's worth it for me to have this mansion over here or to have this field over here, even though an independent assessor might say it's only worth 500, but to me it's worth 1,000.
Yeah, understand the reasoning very well for the one who's taking the property. But what I don't understand is how can he be allowed to take the property when he really used the property as just a security? And once
what do you mean he used it as a security? He didn't use it as a security. This was a regular case of this was a regular case of when he was totem, where he was owed $1,000, he got half the loan was paid off so far using one mansion. Now he's after the second mansion.
No, but if he gets the whole amount. Obviously,
if he gets the whole amount, then he's giving back the mansion. That's the point. He's not getting any more than $1,000. Of course, he can't get rid of it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's what he said. I'll give you the $1,000. You give me back the one you already took, and the one that I have. Of course, you're not going to take. Yeah.
So if he got only half of the debt,
if he's willing to consider that as if he got the whole debt, then he might be willing to. Again, that's what I'm saying. Because people
he
might
forgive debt.
Yeah, because you can forgive debt, but also you might consider, you know what, to a regular person off the street, this house would only be worth 500 zuz. But to me, it's in a nice location or whatever. I'm willing to consider it to be equivalent to $1,000.
So what are we questioning here? He's
no,
right to forgive the debt?
Not whether he's right to forgive the debt. Rami Bar Chama wanted to say that the buyer has no ability to make him do this. He has no ability to either. He certainly has no ability to make him give to me
to
tell him, I'll give you $1,000 and you give me back the mansion. The buyer can say, you know what? Now that I got my hands on this mansion, I want to keep it, no matter what.
Once he gets his hand on the mansion.
Well, that's what we're talking about. He was already tired of it.
At the time of the debt reimbursement, if he gives him the whole debt, he has to give.
Of course. But that's what we're talking about. One other issue we're talking about over here is basically, in this case, where he was already paid up half his debt using the land, do you, especially you being a third party, not even the original bidder, do you have the right to tell him, you know what, I insist that you take payment in a different form. Instead of two mansions, or instead of half mansion, half cash or whatever, I want to force you to take cash and give me the mansion. Do you have the ability to do that? Rami Bar Chama wanted to say no. Rava said that yes.
Yeah.
So now we have the halacha like Rava. No, ish shav yelacha. If it's worth it to you, $1,000, and keep the mansion, and you. No. Nobody's paying $1,000 for anything. Wait. Ish shav yelacha alfa zuzi l'chayeh means that he's saying this mansion that you already have, consider it as if it's worth $1,000. Consider that the debt has been paid off with that, and then you'll leave me alone with the second one. No, the second $1,000 is the second alternative. There's two of So now, okay, so we have the same thing with two parcels of land. Again, instead of $1,000 and $500, it's $150 and $50. Same idea, though. He says to him, Vamila, Yishavilach kuf zuzi l'chayeh, if you're willing to consider that first plot of land equal to 100 zuz, then good. V'ilah yishakul kuf zuzi v'yistalek. If not, then I demand that I'll give you this 100 zuz, and you'll go away from the land entirely, and I'll have both plots. So, suffered of Yosef, I'm behind him, and Rami Yisrael Chula. So, Rav Yosef thought the same as Rami Bar Chama before, that the same, it's similar to our Mishnah. He doesn't have the right to do that. Amalei Abaya, me dummy, and again, Abaya tells him how it's similar. Hasan Islu Pseidu Yasmi. In that case, the Yisraelim are losing out. Hacha might say to Islay, over here, how is the creditor losing out? Meya Yoy, Meya Shokil. He gave 100 as a loan to begin with. He's getting back 100. And again, the question is, and therefore he doesn't have the right to object to that. And again, Maturpa Bakama Kasvinan, how much do you write Maturpa for to entitle him to reimbursement from the original seller, the original loiva, Ravina Amar Meir Amar Bachamshin, Vehilchsa Bachamshin. So it's basically the same thing, except that it's an order of magnitude smaller. That's, the Meiri talks about the idea that in the first case, with the mansions, it was the same person bought both of them. Here it was two different people bought two different plots of land. Other Mepharshim talk about the idea that maybe the value of mansions is more or less variable than that of land. So,
the conclusion being that if he pays back the whole amount,
then he's entitled to force the guy to give up the land.
The creditor.
To give up the land.
Give up the security.
Right. It's not security. He didn't get it as security. He got it as payment of the debt. He got it because the original loan. No, it's not. Security is when you get something to begin with to hold on to until the guy pays the debt. This wasn't security. There was a lien on it. And no, it's not security. Security means that you give it to him to begin with, saying that you're entitled to hold on to this until I pay off the debt. Security is a mashkin. Yeah, you're not.
And this was what? This was.
This was tirfa. This was that he took it away. If there's a whole rigmarole that I'm going to describe in Hilchos Mavon Leiva, that if a person defaults on a debt, if he doesn't pay it off, there's a whole rigmarole that the Baal Chayiv has to go through before he can take any real estate away. You check to see whether he has any property of his own. If he doesn't, then you start looking among the Lakukas. You go and figure out the value of it. You make a public announcement.
It was an unencumbered field or
originally it was land that originally belonged to Reuben, the borrower. Then he sold it to Shimon sometime after he borrowed from Levi, which makes it nechasim b'shabbatim. It makes it property that's under a lien to the loan. So now, indeed, Reuben defaulted on the debt. Levi exercised his rights to go take it away from Shimon. And that's what we're dealing with over here. Another case, Hahu gavra dava maski b'mei zuz. There was a person who owed 100 zuz. Shachid, he passed away. Shavu ptina da'ara dava shavu chamishan zuz. He left over a small plot of land that's worth 50 zuz. Also, Balchoyv the Katorif lay. Balchoyv came and was taking it away from him, and was taking it away from the buyer. Not from a buyer, even from the Yisoimim themselves. Also, Yasmi Yavule Chamshin Zuzi. So the Yisoimim went and paid him off 50 zuz, pay off half the debt, and get back the field. Well, he wanted to take it away again. Look, you know, I have an outstanding loan of 100. You paid me off 50, very nice. I'm still entitled to another 50. Also, the Kamei Dabaya, so they came to Abaya to ask him, what's the story over here? He tells them like this, you should know, Yisoimim have a mitzvah to pay off their father's debt. Now, why is that? Rashi, the Yisoimim have a mitzvah to pay off their father's debt. So Rashi says, as a matter of covered for their father, they should be paying off his debt. The Beis Din can't force them for it. We talked about the other day that the Baal Chayiv himself, if he says, I don't want to do the mitzvah, I don't want to pay, we can force him to makanos sachetesin. Actually, the Yisoimim, especially being young children, we can't force them to do that. Nevertheless, though, they still have a mitzvah to do it. So therefore, Hani kamoi mitzvah ditu. So when you paid him off the original 50, that wasn't, you thought that it was to buy back the field. It wasn't. That was considered. That original 50 was that you were fulfilling that mitzvah, paying off your father's debt. Part of it anyway. Hashtag, out of the 100. Hashtag kitarif bidin kitarif. Now, if he wants to take away the field for the other 50, he's entitled to. You don't have the right to say that you paid him off in order to prevent him from taking this field. No, you paid him off in order to fulfill the mitzvah of paying off the debt.
Because you paid him off partially.
However, this only applies if they didn't explicitly tell him, you know what, these 50 zuz that we're giving you are payment for this field. If they didn't tell him that, then he has the right to assume, like Abaya was just saying, that they were paying it as a mitzvah of paying off the debt. But if they explicitly tell him we're giving you this 50 zuz as the price of this small plot of land, well then yes, Salukhi Salkua. Well then yes, they removed him from it, and therefore he doesn't have the right to take it again. The field is worth 50. They removed him from being able to take this field because they bought it back from him. At this point, it's not a field that they inherited from their father anymore. Effectively, it's a field that they themselves own now, and he doesn't have the right to take it from them again. It's not meshubad to the loan anymore because they paid him off for it. Now he's going to have to go after 50 zuz from other property of theirs, but their metalpolin are not meshuvud to the loan because the metalpolin of Yisoimim are not meshuvud to the loan. So therefore, he's going to have to wait till they're grown up and take them to Beis Din.
Like
they bought the
initial debt of 100. They came and they paid.
They paid off 50. So we're saying if they didn't say anything otherwise, then we assume that 50 was meant towards the payment of the debt, not towards getting back the field. Therefore, the field still belongs to them as that the field still belongs to them that was taken from their father.
To them,
to the Yisoimim. They inherited it from their father. Therefore, he has the right to take it now. As opposed to if we say that they brought it back from him, then it's not under the original shibud. Here also, there's a lot of discussion among the Rishonim about the details of this mitzvah la'yisaimim l'freya chayv aviyim. How exactly this works? Are we saying that their metalpolim are subject to this mitzvah to pay off the chayv aviyim, which is we're talking about over here, that they paid him money, which is metalpilin. Or, you know, Rashi's point that the mitzvah to pay is because of kavod for their father. Again, there's a lot of different discussion about the exact mechanism over here. When we say mitzvah leisem the frei chayv aviyim, and that therefore we say that the original 50 is considered payment for the debt, how exactly, what's the underlying legal principle over here?
But I'd like to understand how come we're saying that up to the 50 the field was in a way encumbered, and beyond, when the debt was 100, and beyond that it was not.
I don't understand. It's not that it's not encumbered anymore. If they told the Baal Chayv when they brought him the 50, we want to buy back that field that you took away from us.
Yeah.
And then in that case they bought it back from him. Now that field.
He still owed
100. He still owed 50. Fine, but he can't take it from that field because that field didn't belong to their father. Effectively, it's considered like a whole new entity.
But why would he give it back?
What? Mitzvah leisem the freya will mean that there's a mitzvah, but we can't force him to. So that we should
but
take.
Even of this,
yeah.
Even of the carbon, it's just,
yeah.
Of the
yeah, but
why would he give the field back if?
Because they're paying him 50. He said,
and he's owed 100.
So he's owed 100. So he took away the field for 50. They were coming and wanting to buy back the field from him. So he argued, I should be able to take away the field.
Okay.
He took away the field for 50. They bought it back from him.
Yeah.
He wants to argue, I should be able to take away that field again. But if they explicitly told him when they gave him the 50, we're giving it to you to buy back the field, then buying back the field makes it a new entity. As opposed to, if they didn't tell him, then we assume that 50 is mitzvah leisem. Another case, how who gavra the zabna l'ksubasa de'ima b'tovas hanah? There was a person who sold his mother's ksuba for tovas hanah. Tovas hanah, we talked about before, is that you're selling it basically on, the buyer is taking a risk. He may or may not be able to collect it, depending on the circumstances, so therefore you sell it cheap. Rashi gives two possibilities over here. Either it means that he sold the actual, his mother had remarried another husband, so he sold her ksuba while her second husband was still alive. And the reason why Rashi has to say it was another husband is because otherwise we get into ksubas benin dichrin. That's one possibility, is that he sold the ksuba while her husband was alive. The second possibility, Rashi says, is that we're talking about what he did is he sold a field that her husband had designated, that her husband, her first husband, his father, had designated that that was going to be how she was going to be paid her ksuba out of. So the son went and sold that to somebody else. For this cheap price. But Amaleh, he tells him, you should know, you're taking a risk over here. If my mother comes and objects to the sale, I'm not going to help you counter her claims, and I'm not going to pay you back. I'm selling it without achrayus. As because we talked about before, usually there is achrayus, but you can explicitly say that I'm not selling without achrayus. Well, in this case, so his mother passed away without ever objecting, but he himself, the son who had sold it to begin with, came with an objection. He argues, basically, that now I'm coming to inherit this ksuba or this field in place of my mother, therefore I should be entitled to get it. And I should be entitled to claim that it's mine, and as far as you're going to want your reimbursement, well, I sold it to you without a chrayus, you took your risk.
Usually, the
halacha is that it doesn't have to be stipulated, but in this case, he specifically stipulated that there is no achrayus. He specifically said, if my mother comes and objects, then tough luck. That he explicitly said, shalai b'achrayus. So Rami Bachama thought to say, okay, he stands in the place of his mother. So yes, in that case, his mother could have objected. He also has the ability to object. True, okay, fine. He didn't accept achrayus in case his mother objects. Achrayus didei milei kabel. Didn't he accept achrayus if he himself objects? You can't say that he's just that he's standing in place of his mother and therefore whatever his mother could have done, he could have done. He specifically, he told the guy that you're safe against any objections from my mother. Or you're not safe, rather, against any, implying, but you are safe against any objections from me. So no, he doesn't have the right to object, and if he does, if he wants the land back, he's going to have to pay for it. Amar Rami Bachama, Reuben Shemacha Sogel Shimon Shaloi Bachrayus. Now what happens? Reuben sells a field to Shimon without Achrayus. Again, he specifically said there's no Achrayus. So if one of my creditors takes it from you, then tough luck. Then Shimon went and sold it back to Reuben, the original owner, with Achrayus. And now Reuven's Balchov, who already lent him money before the original sale, came and took away the property. So he took it away from Reuven because Reuven himself is the debtor anyway. He would have taken it away from Shimon if Shimon still had it at the time. Either way, it's Nechasa Mishabadim. Dinahu de'azol Shimon u'matzilei. Then the din is that Shimon has to go and reimburse Reuven. Why? What's the logic? Rashi says the same way as if it wasn't just Reuven and Shimon. If we introduced a third party over here, if Reuven had sold it to Shimon, Shaloi b'Achrayus, and Shimon had sold it to Levi b'Achrayus, and then the Balchoyev came and took it away from Levi for Reuven's debt, which he would be entitled to do. Of course, Shimon would have to reimburse Levi. Doesn't change the fact over here that we're only talking Reuven and Shimon, and Reuven himself originally sold it, Shaloi b'Achrayus. Amalei Rava, why? Nehida Achrayus to Alma Kabbal Alei. Okay, it's true that Shimon accepted on himself Achrayus for anybody else who comes from any outside sources. If anybody comes and takes it because of my debt or because of or whatever, then fine. I'm taking responsibility. Achrayus to Nafshim Kibbal Alei. Did he accept on himself that I'm also going to pay you back for anything that happened because of your own outstanding loan? No, we shouldn't assume that. The Rif has a gusa the other way around, actually, Achrayus, what is it, Achrayus Dinapche versus Achrayus Dalam, it amounts to the same thing. It's just a different way of wording the Gemara. The Gemara says, Umoide Rabba, Reuven should Yorash Sodom Yaakov, Makro L'Shimon Shaloi B'Achrayus. However, Rabba does admit that the din would be like Rami Bachama is saying, if instead of that Reuven, if we're talking about a field, that Reuven yarshin from Yaakov, or machro l'shimon shalai b'achrayus, he sold it to Yaakov, and Shimon is not his brother. Shimon is just another unrelated person. He sold it to him without achrayus, but also Shimon and machro Reuven l'achrayus, and then Shimon came and sold it to Reuven b'achrayus, and the difference is, the wrinkle is, also b'achrayus to Yaakov, b'katar of Leminei, if it's not just Reuven's creditor, like in the previous case, that takes it away, it's Yaakov, the father's creditor, who comes and takes it away, then Rava agrees, dinahu d'azol Shimon u'matzi Leminei, then Rava agrees that Shimon has to reimburse Reuven. My time of Bachoiv to Yaakov, Bachoiv to Alma Dami, because even though you might have thought to say, well, Reuven is Yaakov's son, he should be considered Brach HaRadavur, the child is considered like a part of his father. No, we don't consider that. Yaakov, for this purpose, is considered like a third party, and even though it's his own father. So yes, therefore, since the Bachoiv is taking it away not because of Reuven's debt, but rather because of Yaakov's debt, then yes, in that case, then we don't say that Shimon didn't mean to accept any responsibility that has anything to do with Reuven. Only any problems that come because of Reuven himself. This wasn't because of Reuven himself; it was because of Yaakov. So yes, Shimon will have to reimburse him. Next, in Omer Rami Bachama, Reuven Shemacha Sadol Shimon Bachrayus. If Reuven sold the field to Shimon, here we're talking about he sold with Achrayus, so the regular deal that if one of my creditors ends up taking it away from you, I'll reimburse you. The Zakaf Olav Bemilva, but instead of actually taking the money at the time, he wrote a Shtar Chov for it, that you'll owe me the amount for this field as if it was a debt. Umes Reuven, now so he didn't get any actual cash on the barrel head right then. Umes Reuven, now Reuven, the original seller, died, but also Balchov, the Reuven, the Katara Flame of Shimon, and the Balchov now is trying to take the field away from Shimon in payment of Reuven's debt. Or Paisib is Luzi, so Shimon instead goes and buys off the Balchov with money, similar to what we were talking about before. You know who Dominic, so now is he entitled to get reimbursed by Reuven's heirs? Dinahu da'amrile b'nei Reuven, so the din is that Reuven's children can tell him, Anan mitalfli shavach avuch gabon. Now, your father left us, our father left by you mitalfli. What are we saying? We're saying that our father owed you as a milva, the amount, the value of the field. That's mitalfli, money is mitalfli. U'mitalfli diyasmi l'balchoy l'mishtabdi, and the mitalfli of Yisoyvim are not under shivud to balchoy. So therefore you don't have the ability to we don't have any land that we inherited from our father, which you would be able to use to collect the debt. All we have is metalpolin. You can't take our metalpolin. You're gonna have to wait till we're older.
So he keeps.
Shimon doesn't have any recourse right now. He's not going to be able to collect. Now, I'm okay. There is still going to be the mitzvah that he sent with the five of him. But again, Beis Din can't force them to fulfill that mitzvah. So therefore.
If the guy has land, can we?
If the Yisraelim have land, then yes, they he can take the land. That's what we said before that land of Yisraelim is still under Shibud, but Metopolim, no.
So if you only have Metopolim, which is his estate,
then he's out of luck. Yeah.
And then when they become big?
Then he'll be able to take up the base and collect from the Metopolim, I think, yeah. Again, you know, as we were talking about the Takanas HaGaonim, that nowadays you can collect from the Metopolim as well, so this particular halacha doesn't apply to that extent anymore, because there is a Shibud on Metopolim as well. Amar Rava, Ipkeach Idach, if Shimon is smart, then how will he arrange the situation so that he'll be able to collect from them? Magbi Lahu Nihalayu Ara, he will tell them, fine, you know what? When the Yisraelim are suing him for payment, you have to realize over here that each one of them each one of them, Reuben and Shimon kind of owed each other something. Reuben was owed the value of the field. Reuben was owed the value of the field. Shimon is now owed the achrayus, the fact that the field was taken away from him. So if the guy is smart, magbi lahu nihalayu ara, what he'll tell them is fine. I'll pay off the debt that I still owe you, the fact that I never paid off the value of the field in the first place. I'll give you land for it, v'hadar gavi laminayu, and then he can take that very land away from them. As if they had actually yarshined it. Shir of Nachman. This works like Rav Nachman
there
said.
To change the debt on the top and into debt on the
land. Basically, yeah. And actually, one of the Rishonim, I think the Ritva, says that it may not even be that he has to take a different piece of land. It can be the very same land. He can say, you know what? Let's undo the sale. You can have back your land. And now, after he does that, now he's able to collect that very land from them in payment to the Achrayus.
But it's almost mere money.
No, he's allowed to do that. To Kirav Nachman, to Amar of Nachman, Amar Rava Baruchu. Yisraimim shagavu kalka b'chayvus avir. If Yisraimim collected kalka in payment of a debt that was owed to their father, Baruchu, chayvus of a gavus in the hand, then Baruchu is able to take that away from them as if they actually yarshined it. Because how did you get it? You got it through a shibud of something that was owed to your father. So it's as if you already inherited it yourself. Well, if you inherited it, I'm entitled to take it, like any property that you inherited. It's also Mephoshim bringing over here, you have the concept, you know, you have also, in all this Gemara over here, you have the concept that we talked about a week and a half ago of Shibud the of Nothing, that if Reuven owes Shimon, who owes Levi, then we say that you take the money directly from Reuven and give it to Levi. So here, that comes into the picture with a number of these dinim also. We're saying, therefore, you have Reuven owes Shimon, who also owes Reuven, or in this case, it's Reuven's heirs, whatever. Fine, you know, it doesn't have to be Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. It can be the same kind of thing, where it comes out that Reuven effectively owes money to himself, but still, Shibud the of Nothing says that we can do that.
And that works between Metopolim and Karka?
No, so that's what we're saying. No, so if Reuven and Shimon themselves were alive, then yeah, it would work with both Metopolim and Karka. Because Reuven's dead and we're dealing with Yisraelim, therefore we have to convert it into Karka, yeah. Amar Rava, another din, Reuven shemacha kol sadeitz of the Shimon. If Reuven sold off all of his fields to Shimon, because of Shimon umacha sadachas to Levi, and then Shimon went and sold one of those fields to Levi, va'asa ba'chov to Reuven, and Reuven's ba'chov comes along and wants to take away property to pay. No, it's not too late. No.
Not too late.
He can go to either one. Rotsa mizegova, rotsa mizegova. He can go to Shimon if he wants. He can go to Levi if he wants.
Okay.
Now, the thing is like this. Midin Torah, if a Baal Chayv is collecting karka, all he's entitled to is ziburis. There's three general types of karka, three general grades. There's three grades. Idis, good, best quality, Beninus, average quality, and ziburis, low quality. Minatora, the Baal Chayv is entitled to ziburis. The Chachamim realize you have this noel delos b'fnei loiven problem. Nobody's going to want to lend money if there's a good chance that all they're going to get is ziburis. So they upgraded him to beinus. So as the Gemara is going to continue saying over here, if Shimon had sold the beinus field to Levi, then this Baal Chayv has a choice. He can go to Levi and get the beinus that usually he's entitled to, or he could say, you know what? Since Shimon has no more beinus, then I get upgraded to idis. That's what Rashi says. Other Rishonim argue and say that maybe he gets downgraded to Ziburis, but okay, so he has his choice whether to go to Levi or whether to go to Shimon. If Shimon has Bein and Atosa, then he can only go to Shimon. Wait, the Gemara is going to tell that. Is going to talk about that in another line. The
but
point
even if Shimon has Bein and he could go to.
No, then if Shimon still has Bein and Atosa, then he has to go to Shimon. There's no logical reason for
Shimon
it.
If Shimon has Idis
and Ziburis, if he has Idis only, if he has Idis and Ziburis, so Rashi says it doesn't matter. The Baal Chayav will be able to go to Idis now. Because the Beininess is gone, so therefore I can upgrade. Other Rishonim say that no, he gets downgraded to Ziburis, but okay, we could be talking about where all he has left is Idis. Whatever it is, the Baal Chayav has his choice.
Let me just ask you a question. If he had initially Ziburis and Idis, and Baal Chayav waited until it was just Idis, still gets the Idis?
What do you mean he waited until? I mean,
because he wants his better life.
But what are we talking about over here? If Shimon had previously sold some of that land to Levi, then that's what we're dealing with over here in the Gemara, whether the Baal Chayav can has a right to take from Levi or only from Shimon.
And he has,
we're
saying.
No, that's because he sold the Bein of it.
Right.
Yeah. No, you're right. If he sells the Buddhist, then if he sells the Buddhist, then you're right. He can only go to Shimon, and if all Shimon has left is Idis, then yeah, all he can take Idis, yeah. Anyway, Rashi talks about, by the way, that we have to be talking about over here. Rashi says that when Reuben originally sold the fields to Shimon, he sold them all at once. Because otherwise, we would argue, if he sold them piecemeal, then there's no reason to take from Levi. Then logically you take only from Shimon, because the whole point is that Shimon already left a place, you know, there's already land that still belongs to Shimon that the debt can be collected from. There's no reason to go after Levi. Tosfos discusses differently. Tosfos says that we still could be talking about cases where he sold them piecemeal. Tosfos says because if the whole point is that the reason why we would say the whole there's a concept called the Ein Nifraim and Chasam Shabbatim Machm Shesh B'nei Chorin, that if there's property that still is owned by the original debtor, by the original loiva, then you don't have the right to take away from other buyers. In this case over here, the original debtor Reuben can argue that you know what, I don't want that to come to Rabbanan. So therefore, he could, because a person can say that the Takana was meant to benefit me. Shimon can say that the Takana was meant to benefit me. In this case, I'm better off without that Takana. I'm better off letting him go after Levi. It just discusses that it could even work if it was multiple documents. Anyway.
So he can go.
So far what the Gemara itself is saying is that the creditor can go either to Shimon or to Levi as he pleases. This only applies, though, if the field that Levi bought was Beinonis. Abel Zabna Idis v'Ziburis, but if what he bought from Shimon is an Idis or a Ziburis field, Matzi Omale, then Levi, when the creditor comes, Levi can tell him, no, you're not entitled to take that. Lahochi Tauchi was Vini out of the Lechazelach. I specifically went to the trouble of buying land that's not meant for you to collect from, because you're only meant to collect from Beinonis, really, and therefore you should go to Shimon, who still has the Beinonis. And even if Levi bought the Beinonis, that would only apply if Shimon did not still have more Beinonis of the same quality. But if he has still Beinonis of the same quality, so there were a few fields of Beinonis and he sold one to Levi and he still has the rest, then again, Levi has the ability to say to the Baal Chayav, Matzi Amalehi Nachti L'cham Lachim L'gbe Semenu, I left you over a place where you can collect from. Tosfos says that Lushan is usually talking about the original owner and the first buyer. Not here we're talking about a first buyer and a second buyer. The principle is basically that we're saying that the principle is that Levi can say, you know what, why are you coming after me for my Beinonis when Shimon still has Beinonis? He's closer to the original Baal Chayav. Another din, Amar Abaya, Reuven Shemacha Sodal Shimon Bachrayus. If Reuven sells a field to Shimon with Achrayus, with the guarantee that he'll be reimbursed if the field gets taken away by a creditor. But also Baal Chayav the Reuven Vatar Plemine, and a Reuven's creditor comes to take it away from Shimon. Do you know who the other Reuben of Machpelah is? The din is that Reuben goes and talks with him and talks with him in Beis Din, and argues the case against him. So what we mean over here, the Rif has a gzirsa that Reuben has to go to Beis Din, that he can't say I have no dog in this fight. He has to go and plead the case in Beis Din instead of Shimon, the one who actually bought the property and who it was taken away from, because the whole thing is happening because of Reuben's debt. Other Rishonim don't have that gzirsa. It's just that we're saying that Reuben can go. According to the Rif, Reuben has to go. According to everybody else, it's Reuben can go, meaning that the creditor can't say to Reuben, "I have no business dealings with you," or "Not, I have, not, I mean, I have. You borrowed money from me." But he, on the face of it, shouldn't he be able to say, "Look, I'm taking away the property from Shimon. If Shimon objects, let him come to Beis Din. Why are you coming? What business do you have over here?" He can't say that. Why? Mishum de Amale. Because Reuben can tell him, "I do have a dog in this fight. Demakus minei, alai hader. If you take it away from him, it's going to bounce back onto him. It's going to bounce back onto me. What's going to happen? Shimon is going to activate the achrayus clause. He's going to come back to me for reimbursement. So yes, I do have an interest over here, and therefore I have reason to be arguing against you in Beis Din, and argue that I paid already or whatever." The long Tosfos over here discusses the issue, by the way, which a bunch of other Rishonim and Achronim also talk about. Whatever arguments Shimon would have made, Reuben's going to make, or vice versa. What's the difference, really, whether we say, according to the Rish Girsa that we're saying that Reuben has to go to Beis Din, then okay, we understand. But according to the Girsa that we have, that Reuben can go to Beis Din, what's the Chiddush? What's the Nafkamina? What's Reuben going to be able to accomplish that Shimon wouldn't, or vice versa? So Tosfos gives a couple of possibilities. It could be, for example, that Tosfos discusses the issue. Maybe if there are edim that are relatives of one versus not the other, and but Tosfos shoots that down because both of them have a vested interest over here. There can be different possibilities. For example, that Reuven knows that he paid. All, Rashi says Rashi mentions Tosfos quotes that Reuven might be able to argue, "I paid you off. I want you to swear before you collect these nechassim." Shimon may not know that. A lot of various other possibilities. Tosfos brings up another possibility. Maybe Reuven has reason to know that the document might be forged. The whole shtar chayiv might be forged. Shimon might not know that. A lot of other. Reuven might just be a better arguer.
Remains that when Reuven sold the field with Acharias, he was sold with Acharias. And the buyer accepted
that. That's what we're saying. Therefore, Reuven has the ability to go with this Baal Chayiv to Beis Din, rather than the Baal Chayiv telling him, "You go away. You have no business over here. Let me deal with Shimon." So whatever, that's what I'm saying. The Tosfos is basically discussing who cares whether it's Reuven or Shimon can come. And the answer is there can be various cases where it would be more advantageous for Reuven to go. What? Yeah, Reuven could argue paraiti. He could argue paraiti. He could argue mizuya. He could just be a better debater.
Shimon is not indifferent to that. That's the point.
Yeah. The ikad amri after the shaloi b'achrayus nami. Another version is that all of this applies even if he sold it without achrayus, where then he doesn't have the argument to makis minei alai hader. It's not going to be coming back on me.
Right.
But still, the amale, still Reuven has an argument. He can say, "La nichali the hevele the shimon tarumas alai. I don't want Shimon to have complaints against me. I don't want him to think that I'm an untrustworthy guy. I sell fields. So even if I don't have actual financial skin in the game, I still have my reputation. So I still have my reputation and my good relationship with Shimon to uphold." Yeah.
But that's obvious.
It's not so obvious. That's why we need to point it out. And tarumas is very nice. You know, tarumas means complaints, but fine. You know, tarumas plus 250, you'll get you on the subway. You know, it's not like it has any monetary value, but
credit.
No, but that's the point. You know, okay. I'm gonna buy the last case. Reuven shemachar sadal l'shimon shaloi b'achrayus. Reuven sold the field to Shimon without achrayus. The yotzu olav asikin, and objectors came against the field, meaning that they're objecting, they're arguing the field doesn't belong to Reuven or whatever. So now Shimon says, you know what, in that case, let me wash my hands of the whole business. I can't be bothered. I don't want to have to bother buying a field where then I'm going to have to be defending my title to it all the time in Beis Din. Up to what point can he retract? Ad shalai hechzik mo yachalach. But before he makes a chazaka in it, he's able to retract. Once he made a chazaka in it, he's not able to retract. He's not able to take it back anymore. Now, what do we mean?
3 years?
No. We're going to talk in a second what the chazaka is for this purpose. What do we mean by retract or not retract? So Rashi says we're talking about he hadn't actually paid the money yet. So therefore, before he does the chazaka, then he had the right to tell Reuven, you know what, forget about it, I don't want this field. And we don't make him, usually the rule is in Dine Mominus, that when someone contracted to buy something, even before he made a formal kinyan on it, there's a concept, if he wants to renege, there's a concept called Misha Para, that basically makes him accept on himself a curse that the Eibishter, who punished the Dera Floga and the people of Sodom, etc., is going to punish somebody who doesn't uphold his word. In this case, we're saying he doesn't have to worry about that. He's allowed to retract because he has a valid reason. It's both, really. If Reuven and Shimon make a deal between them that they're going to, one's going
to
buy, one's going to sell, and money changed hands, let's say, but there was no Meshicha yet, then yeah, they can change, either one can change their mind, but there's Misha Parah. In this case, there's no Misha Parah.
Before he can get.
But once he made the chazaka, which the chazaka we're going to talk about in a second, because he's saying...
Well,
the chazaka that we're talking about over here is that that's the point. In other words, Rashi says that the kauka is bought with chazaka. So the fact that money didn't change hands yet, but if he already made the chazaka, at that point he fully bought it. He made a kinyan. That's what I'm talking about. You know, let's learn the next line or two, and then we'll talk about what Rashi and Tosfos explain on this. So Ad Shalai Hechzikba, before he made the Chazaka, Yochal Lachzibah, he can change his mind. Misha Hechzikba, once he made the Chazaka, any Yochal Lachzibah, then he's not able to change his mind. Why? Mishum D'Amalei, because Reuven can tell him, Chayse D'Kitri Sabras V'Kabilas. You knew that you're getting a bag full of knots. And that's indeed what you got. In other words, it's like you were willing to take the chance, a bag full of knots. Like imagine you have one knot on top of another, and then you open it up, and there's nothing in there. You knew you were taking a risk by buying a field Shalei Bachrayus. So once you made a chazaka on it already, then you were coin it, and that's that. At what point is considered the chazaka? Miki Daesh HaMetzri. Once he tramples down the borders of the field. They used to have that they'd heap up around the sides of each field to demarcate one field from the next. They'd heap up a pile of dirt and make a long, narrow pile of dirt going along the edge. If you buy one field and then you have another one next to it, then you'd trample that down in order to make it nice and smooth so you can plow easily. Once he does that, that's considered the chazaka for this purpose.
After that,
he can't change his mind. Ikadamri, another version, Afila Bachrayus Nami, that this din would apply even if he bought the field Bachrayus, Da'amalei, because Reuven can tell him, you can't retract now. Once you show me a shtar from Beis Din that the field was taken away from you and you're entitled to reimbursement, then I'll reimburse you. Don't say you're gonna renege on the deal now. Okay, so there are people claiming the field didn't belong to me. Talk is cheap. People can claim anything. I don't think there's any chance they're gonna win in Beis Din. So I'm not willing to undo the deal and take back the field until it actually gets taken away from you. So what are we talking about over here? So Rashi says again, we're talking about he didn't give money yet. So once he did the chazaka of trampling down the berm, but not walking around, trampling down the berm, the trampling down the earth, then he can't change his mind. Tosfos talks differently. Rabbeinu Tam says in Tosfos that even if he did pay money, you could have a case where they wrote in the shtar that even though money already changed hands, and usually land can be bought because of the shtar of a chazaka, you might have written over here in the shtar that the kinyan doesn't take effect until the shtar is written. So even though money changed hands already, the shtar wasn't written yet, he can still change his mind.
If it's stipulated
like that, yeah. And then Tosfos discusses also the issue. What is the Gemara asking over here? What's considered a chazaka? I mean, we know the dinim, what's considered a chazaka. No, God, or Paras, etc. Tosfos says that what we're talking about over here, given that we're saying that he already gave the money, where normally the kinyan should have taken effect in this case, we need some kind of chazaka that demonstrates that he meant it to definitely take effect at this point. What chazaka is that? The chazaka of unlocking a door or putting up a fence or whatever, those are strong chazaka. It's fine. If he does those, there's no question. But even if he does this weaker chazaka of trampling down the earth over there, where you could say, you know, it's easy to rebuild back up. Nevertheless, we say that's enough. That's too late. So this chazaka, according to Rashi, would be considered a kinyan. Tosfos is saying that it's weaker than Nor Gadol Paratz, but still, for this purpose, because it's together with the payment of money, that it's enough to be considered a chazaka. But Samazay wouldn't be.
It comes at the same time as the money, before the money, or after the money?
What comes at the same?
The
trampling? The Vashtas after. The Vashtas after. He gave the money. They said that the kinyan is not going to take an effect until the shtar is written, but because he also did the Dayash HaMetri, because he trampled down the earth, then already we're saying at that point the chazaka is already in effect, and he can't go back on it.
There has to be 18 for the chazaka?
No. I don't think so, necessarily. I don't know. One more interesting thing, just to point out this expression, chayitza d'kitri. Rashi says over here it means a bag full of knots. In Baba Kama, Rashi instead says it means a bag full of rim. Like you knew you're taking a chance, like you bought a bag which turns out to be full of air. Maharam Sheikh brings an interesting idea. The Gemara in
because
there was an achrayus. In the original case, there was no achrayus. You buy a fuel without achrayus, you're taking your risk. Maharam Shift says an interesting thing in Gittin. And the Gemara tells in Gittin a story of how Rish Lakish outwitted the Ludoi. The Ludoi, actually says over there, were a cannibalistic tribe, that Rish Lakish fell in with them for a while, and then he tricked them and killed them and escaped. What happens is the Gemara describes any person before he was condemned to be killed by these people, they'd give him his last wishes. In this case, he says to them, I want to take a bag. He brings out a bag. I want to be able to hit each of you with this bag 1.5 times. They didn't realize that inside the bag is a heavy weight. And Rish Lakish is a big, powerful guy. So when he hit them with that bag, that was the end of them. So Maharam Shif says, from there we get this expression, Chayitza d'kitri savras v'kiblos. You expected to get hit with a bag that you didn't know that there was that heavy weight in there. Tough luck on you. You should have checked more carefully. Yeah. It's